Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind. And now, our feature presentation. In Deathland 71, Ritual Chill, amidst the howling winds of the frozen Alaskan tundra, Dr. Theophilus Tanner finally went mad, which brought Ryan Carter and his companions to the brink of destruction. Now, having narrowly escaped the chaos, Ryan and his party find themselves wandering the barren wastelands of Alaska. And the state of Doc's mind is still a mystery. Graphic Audio presents James Axler's Deathlands. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Terrence Aselford, Colleen Delaney, Dolores King Williams, Christopher Walker, Kate Torrey, David Coyne, and Mort Shelby. Deathland 72, Atlantis Reprise. The ruins lay smoldering in the valley below them. Worn down by the fight, caught by the searing heat of the fires that had spread through the ville, there were few survivors. Not many people. A few mules and horses, some dogs, those that had managed to slip their bonds and scrabble their way up the steep slopes, their fear powering their limbs as they attempted to outrun the devastation. Ryan Carter, Jack Lauren, J.B. Dix, Mildred Wyeth, and Christy Roth had prevailed, and along with them, Doc Tanner. Or possibly not Doc Tanner. Who could tell in his currently unconscious state whether he would wake to once more be Dr. Theophilus Tanner, or if he would be Joseph Jordan, the reincarnated or transferred soul of a Scottish trapper from the centuries before the nuke cost. For now, it didn't matter. Doc was beyond caring about such matters. He was still wrapped in unconsciousness, and the others began to stir. They had managed to escape the holocaust that raged, but the effort had rendered all of them too exhausted to take another step. Yet this wasn't the place to succumb. The heat, rising on spiraling air from the inferno, was enough to warm the air and earth around them, enough to keep them from freezing to death. But it wouldn't sustain them for long. The cold would bite, the fires below subside. When that happened, then the sudden drop in temperature would take a swift and exacting toll. Ryan was the first to surface from the blackness. He was tired, aching, and felt as though he could settle into the arms of Morpheus forever. He dragged his aching limbs, his legs still suffused with lactic acid burn from their flight, and used his less battered and more responsive arms to propel himself upward into a kneeling position. It took him a moment for him to gain his bearings. He looked out over the empty plain, the daylight already beginning to fade, then back toward the valley, the air around the rim glowing as though casting a benign radiation into the darkening skies. There was no mistaking the odor that drifted across the short distance, cutting through the ever-present sulfur burn that always made the air taste sour. It was the smell of roasted flesh, sickly sweet, and mixed with the ashes of the woods and brick that had once constituted the Villa Fairbanks. A glorious folly. Doc had used those words once, when he was Doc. Not knowing what else to do, Ryan hauled himself to his feet and half walked, half stumbled across the short distance to the rim of the valley so that he could see what was happening below.
Nothing.
Not at least in terms of action or life. There were still tongues of fire whipping across the remains of the ville, crisscrossing over the rubble that was all that remained of the streets and buildings. If anything had managed to stay alive in there, it was trapped and wouldn't stay alive for long. Not that Ryan cared. Those mad Inuit bastards would only have chilled them after they'd burned the Ville's inhabitants. With only a very few left back at the settlement, Ryan guessed that this meant the end of the Inuit tribe.
Oh, fuck them. They would have taken us out.
His only concern about who lived was that they may soon come after his companions. And if his friends felt anything like he did right now, they were in no condition to take on anyone. He turned his back on the mayhem below and trudged wearily to where the rest of the companions lay on the ground, some now beginning to show signs of life. Mildred and Jack were struggling to make their aching limbs respond to the messages their befuddled brains were sending. By the time they were able to lift themselves to their feet, JB and Christy were also beginning to respond to their surroundings. Which left only Doc, blissfully unaware of the perils from which he had been rescued, and the perils in which he now reposed. The shock of a cold was enough to focus their minds. Mildred checked the unconscious Doc.
The old coot seems all right. Just a few contusions and cuts. Nothing more than the rest of us.
Yeah. But is he Doc or that other bastard?
There's no way of telling until he regains consciousness, Ryan.
What the hell do we do now, Ryan? Can't go on to Ank Ridge. We don't know where it is. Don't know how far, and maybe couldn't even pick up the trail.
Even if we could, they'd have some idea of what's been going on. And how the hell could we explain away the trail of devastation the Inuit left behind them? We're all that's left. We'd have to shoulder all the blame and the shit that would come with it. I don't know about you, but I'm sure as fuck not up to another firefight right now.
JB cast a glance back over his shoulder to where Mildred was still tending to Doc.
Not if we've got a passenger as well, but wherever the hell he's gonna be next.
Rock in a hard place. What else is new? Okay, JB, we don't know what lies off the trails, and we don't know how far anything is in any direction except one.
Well, we've only got the two choices. Go back past the slopes, all the way back to the redoubt, and then jump.
That's only one choice. What's the second?
Lie down, go back to sleep, and buy the farm.
Faced with a choice that stark, even the most tired of limbs couldn't fail to click into gear. Mildred made Doc as warm and comfortable as was possible, and then joined the others in their mission under the fading light. There were animals roaming, lost around the rim of the valley. Some of the dogs still had sleds or partial sleds attached to them. The companions' task was to round up as many as they could. The plan was simple. From the sleds that survived, they would attempt to cobble together enough transport to hook up to the beasts. That would enable them to tackle the distance to the redoubt perhaps faster than they would on foot. The remainder of any salvaged wood they could use for fires along the journey, to warm them and their pack beasts in the darkest, coldest watches of the night. By the time that they had collected the livestock, made a fire for the now imminent night, and begun to hammer together enough sleds to carry them and any animal carcasses they would slaughter for food back to the redoubt, they were thoroughly exhausted. Unwilling to begin the slaughter so soon, and to face a sleepless night with the unsettled livestock, the companions resorted to the remaining self-heats. Whatever else occurred, JB and Mildred always ensured that they could keep their essential stocks close to hand. The food was foul, but it was nutritious enough to justify forcing it down, rather than throwing it to one side in disgust. Their stomachs full, they settled to rest, Ryan opting to force himself awake to keep first watch. As his companions and the beasts slept soundly into the night, Ryan cast his eye around him. The valley was now a distant glow, the fires finally burning themselves out. Nothing more had emerged from the ruins, and nothing was likely to have survived. Just the six of them, and a smattering of livestock. The one-eyed man wondered at how his friends were able to drag themselves from precipitous situations, coming back time and again from the brink of being killed. One day their luck would run out, but until then, there was little they could do except keep moving. The journey was long and hard. Started the next morning, it took 2 days and well into a third before the area of the redoubt hove into view. They stuck to the trail between Ville's, now reinforced in view by the detritus left a few days before by the Inuit as they had passed. The pace the companions set was steady. It was almost a pleasure for them to be able to relax and rest weary muscles as the beasts pulling the sleds took most of the strain. Along the trail, the few landmarks that existed seemed to come upon them so much faster than before, inevitably given their mode of transport, but still vaguely disorienting after the rigors of the outward-bound march. The deserted settlements, ripped apart by Plasacs, stood alone and desolate. They were a stark reminder of how close the companions had come to being killed themselves, not once, but several times during the expedition. Even now, they weren't out of danger. The weather had been holding for more than 48 hours, the heavy, yellow-tinged chem clouds pregnant with rain and snow that could engulf them, lose them in the roaring blizzard. There were the occasional glimpses of deer or bear as the packs and herds went about the business of trying to survive. They could be a danger if they approached, but based on past experiences, they hopefully held too much fear of the sleds and those pulling them to come too near. The ice and snow plucked from the rock and swirled in the never-ending flurry of winds, still numb and chilled when coming into contact with exposed skin. Despite the layers of skins and furs that they wore, the companions were chilled to the bone. The trail took them along the base of the volcanic slopes that housed the Inuit village. They skirted the rock-enclosed passage and didn't take the trail as it wound up into the wooded slopes, choosing to avoid a possible firefight by keeping to the base of the slope. Ryan hoped that the few remaining Inuit wouldn't be hunting. Watching the volcano recede peacefully into the distance, it was only a matter of a few hours by sled before they reached the hidden redoubt. All the while, Doc drifted in and out of consciousness. Mildred tended to him, and it seemed to her almost as if he were surfacing, taking note of his surroundings, then retreating into his own mind after deciding that he didn't like what he saw. JB took what sightings he could in the appalling conditions, trusting the accuracy of the mini-sextant and his own skill to attain an accurate reading. Ryan hoped that the armorer's sense of direction was accurate. They couldn't last much longer without some respite from the weather. JB motioned them to change direction, and a familiar outcropping came into view. The end of their quest was in sight. It was almost as if Doc knew. He surprised Mildred by raising himself up on one elbow and looking at her with a quizzical air that was at once all too familiar.
My dear doctor, what on earth are we doing out here in these unbearable conditions? And why, pray tell, do you look as though you've been on the losing side of a fight?
Although nothing had changed within the confines of the redoubt since they had last set foot there, the atmosphere was totally different. Previously, all gloom and foreboding. Now there was nothing but a sense of relief. There was no trace of remorse or remembrance. The strange atmosphere that had seemed to drape itself over them, penetrating to their very souls, had now lifted. Perhaps those ghosts had now dissipated, blown away by the experiences of the past few days. Ryan punched in the set code once they were on the inside of the heavy entry doors. The remaining beasts had been freed from the sleds and driven away from the entrance. They lurked at a distance, unsure of what to do and where to go. As the door closed on the lurking dogs, the companions felt a collective relief. The slightly musty recycled air, heated to a bearable temperature, kicked in, driving the cold from their bones. It was all they could do to keep from collapsing in the tunnel. Except perhaps for Doc, who seemed filled with a new vitality.
By the three Kennedys, I do not know what has occurred. Nor, come to that, why I am still with you when I appear to have been in some sort of coma all this time. But I do know that whatever it is, it appears to have taken a hefty toll upon you all.
Hefty toll? Doc, you mad old freak of nature. I don't think you even know how funny that is.
Funny would appear to be a strange word for it, given the condition in which you find yourselves.
You know, it kind of depends on what you mean by funny, I guess. I mean, do you see me laughing?
I can't recall the last time I saw you laugh.
I don't think you've got the slightest idea what's been going on, have you?
Doc opened his mouth, but no words came forth. Mildred was alone with Doc in the corridor. The others had wordlessly made their way down the corridor, headed for the showers in the dorms. They moved slowly, and with the grim determination of those only kept awake by sheer willpower.
No, I don't suppose you have. Doc, I can't tell you everything now. I'm just too damn tired and aching. Another few hours aren't going to hurt. We just need to rest and clean up before we jump.
We are using the Mat-Trans again? So soon? But surely we should be looking for...
Doc, just don't. Just wait. Keep it all in until tomorrow. Then you'll understand.
Doc stood watching her, a frown furrowing his brow. Whatever had happened out there had had some kind of effect on these people he called his friends.